This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic, episode number 41, being recorded on Wednesday. It's the 10th of January, 2007.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
3 men, a German, a Japanese, and a Texan, were sitting naked in a sauna. Suddenly, there's a beeping sound. The German presses his forearm, and the beeping stops. The others look at him questioningly. "Oh, that's my pager," he says. "I have a microchip embedded under my skin." A few minutes later, a phone rings. The Japanese fellow lifts his palm to his ear. When he's finished, he says, "Oh, that's my mobile phone. I have a microchip in my hand." The Texan feels decidedly low-tech, but not to be outdone, he decides that he has to do something just as impressive. He steps out of the sauna and goes to the bathroom, returning with a piece of toilet paper hanging from his behind. The others raise their eyebrows and stare at him. The Texan finally says, "Well, will you look at that? I'm getting a fax!"
Clinton, liberals, dittos!
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of East, my friends, Son of East, and welcome! You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. It's episode number 41, being recorded on Wednesday. It is the 10th of January, 2007, and my name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, and I'm thrilled and delighted to have each and every one of you here with us today. We have a huge show for you today. This is almost too much show. This is the show that we should have had last week, except last week we had Parviz. This week we don't have Parviz, but we have a big show. Show number 41, or 40, depending upon whether you're counting in base 7. What do we have going on today? Well, first of all, we're going to be checking in with Jason Nathanson. As you know, Jason is now down in Los Angeles. He is a big-time, big-deal news producer at a radio station we're not allowed to mention, KNX. And Jason's going to be covering the Golden Globes in another week. He was also just on the game show 1 to 100, or 1 from 100, or 1 divided by 100, or...
I don't remember what
100,
it was, but it had 100 in it, and there was a 1.
It was 100 and a 1, and yeah. Jason said that he's not allowed to tell
1
us...
1 in 100.
1 in 100. You said that like you knew, and then you rolled your eyes. Not a good
I do that at work all the time.
Here's what one of the things they teach you in law school, they teach you how to stop rolling your eyes.
Oh, I need to go to law school.
So important. It's so important. Lying with confidence 102. So we're going to have... But Jason keeps telling us that he's not allowed to talk about this thing. It's a fucking game show.
And he went through it already,
he's
right?
He's making it sound like it's some kind of national secret, you know? Like, we know more about what happened with Valerie Plame than we do with Jason Nathanson. Of course, we care more about what happened with Valerie. But anyhow, Jason's got all kinds of stuff. And we're talking with Jason Nathanson. Also, towards the end of the show, a good friend of the show, Ken Turetsky, who is the author of that famous song, Her Shit Don't Stink, who asked all of us to vote for his song on the Red Peter Sirius Satellite Radio Show for Song of the Year, which I dutifully did while sitting in my hotel room in Las Vegas, naked, a fact that you didn't really need to know, but I was proud of myself. And just randomly pushing that button over and over and over again, it turns out there was fraud involved.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes. And I had actually pushed, I had pushed Ken to number one because I was naked. and then I realized that I was not able to make his numbers go any higher, no matter how many times. In fact, I actually rigged up something with my PowerBook so that it would just keep pushing the button automatically. And then I went and brushed my teeth and stuff like that. And there he was, kind of slowly going up higher and higher. And I was so proud of myself. And then the next day, I couldn't make any difference in what was happening. And I thought, well, maybe there's so many votes that, you know, my 100 presses don't make any difference. But it turns out there was fraud. And so we're going to have Ken on because, of course, he's such a happy fellow.
Yes.
he's got all the highlights, yeah. Which for him are actually lowlights. But nevertheless, maybe we'll play a little bit of his song as well. But the big time, big deal is we got him. Mark Ehrman, who is the
theatrical director.
Actually, he's the director of theatrical distribution for yeah. Think Film in the United States.
Sorry.
An indie, one of the sort of the true indies that have not yet been acquired by one of the major companies. He's going to be a guest of ours.
That's exciting.
So excited. They've got a brand new film out called Half Nelson. It's in the theaters now. Ryan Gosling is in it. He's been nominated for a SAG Award for Best Actor. So this is all kinds of big deal. And so Mark is going to be with us on the show starting in the second hour. So we're thrilled. Let's say hello to everyone before we say hello to Sherry Stevens. We got Kibadada, Michael Zwirling,
Stroke or Unload,
Dick Cheney, Harry Whittington, 2007, Whitney, Allie, Sammy,
English motherfucker, do you speak it?
Allie number two,
no.
And Parvisa's favorite, Jerry Seinfeld.
Stop laughing, it's not funny.
And sitting across to me is Sherry Stevens, Sona Vista,
Robin.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
So this is a big deal. This is Macworld week.
This has been a phenomenal week, and it's only Wednesday.
This is a big deal for you personally. You have any products that got announced by Uncle Steve on stage?
Well, actually, our group started working on the multi-touch, which is being used on the iPhone, which we announced yesterday.
Which we actually can't call an iPhone because apparently we got sued by Cisco this afternoon.
Oh, was it? Oh, well, I thought that Steve would have cleared that in advance, knowing Steve.
You would think so, wouldn't you?
You think he would just make it happen, but
okay. Any lawyers in the room who are responsible for things at Apple, raise your hand. Okay, not me.
Yeah. So it's exciting. It's exciting to see a technology that you saw from the beginning. We weren't even sure what application it would go in. We just thought it was cool.
Okay.
And then they went into total lockdown mode. So the guys that had been working on this multi-touch were, you know, put into a different building with badge access that nobody could get to. And
this is very futuristic kind of stuff. This is a lot like Tom Cruise in that film in the future where they arrest people before they do the crime, and he's sort of moving things around with his hand.
He's got
multiple things, and so more than it's sort of the evolution.
That film actually was pretty, and I can't even remember what the name of it was, but I remember
Minority Report.
Right, that's what it was. We brought in scenes of that because when we started working on the multi-touch, that was the
prior art.
Yeah, that was the concept that we wanted to get to. And so it's just really exciting, and I'm really thrilled for these guys that have been working on it and to see Steve do the keynote, and it went really well. I mean, there were no glitches for a product that is not mature yet, mature right. enough to sell, it went really well. The demo went
and
well.
And this is a bizarre week because here in the United States, I don't know whether people realize it around the world, but here in the United States, this is also the week of CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, which is sort of the grand unveiling, if you will, of all kinds of gewgaws and doodads and gadgets and things that you plug in. The stuff that women hate their boyfriends loving.
Yep.
That's what Las Vegas is all about. And also in Las Vegas, it's frequently coupled with the Adult Film Industry Awards as well, which is...
It's no coincidence.
It's not?
That it happens at the same time.
I see.
Time.
So you've been to CES.
I have.
I see. And did you make it over to the Adult Film...
I didn't. I did see... I mean, at the time I went, the conference halls were not far from each other.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, you do see who's sneaking off from CES and going on over. Yeah. See you later. We're really tired. We're going to go back to our room. Yeah.
But it's an amazing amount of human endeavor, industry, energy, thought, capital of all kinds that go into building distractions. I mean, not a complaint, but that's what these are. These are distractions. If the world didn't have an iPhone, the world wouldn't necessarily be one step closer to total collapse and chaos.
No.
Right?
But with the iPhone. Can you imagine what you can do? It's exciting. It's just really an exciting time. It's exciting to be a part of it and to watch everything kind of unfold and the reactions that people have.
It certainly fulfills the dreams of lots of creative people, and that's one of the reasons that I got into technology from the legal point of view, that I don't do a lot of courtroom work and that I don't do divorce and real estate, is I like working with people that are creating new things. It's fun to spend time with them and become part of that creative process, because if you're a creative person yourself, you manage a team, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so while you're not you don't have an engineering background,
no,
you have the opportunity to have input into that creative process.
You bet. And it's
right?
Because of the questions. You know, I can ask any question and, you know,
exactly,
to find out a little bit more, and it's exciting.
So you get to play any man or any woman. You
right.
get to play one of the things that I'm most proud of with the iPod, some people, I hear noises. I'm mm-hmm. guessing Dr. Meehan may be in the house shortly. One of the things that I'm most proud of is I was the attorney that helped establish the iPod division, and spent about a year getting all of that up to speed. That meant putting all of the contracts together, all the licenses together to bring things in, all of the marketing, manufacturing, because as you say, this was a skunk works. This was done in
right.
a separate building with a different key and a different badge, and you weren't allowed to come in any other way. And I was responsible for putting all of that together. But for me, one of the things that was coolest is I was on the team that was finding bugs.
Yeah.
And I won the award for finding more bugs in the original iPod than anybody else, for which I won a first-generation iPod right off of the line.
Oh, that's great.
And they were amazed
is
that I was
still
able...
working?
It still works.
Yep.
And I were amazed that I was able to do this. And I said, well, you have to understand, I'm not thinking about this like an engineer. I'm thinking about this like a user. If I see three buttons in a row that I can push simultaneously, I'm going to push all
right.
those buttons at the same time.
What does this do? Well, what does that do?
And they would say to me, well, why the fuck would you do that? And I go, because you can. Because
mm-hmm.
it's pretty and it's white and it's polished and it's smooth and I can push all those buttons at the same time. I want to see what the hell's going to go on. So that is a tremendous thrill. Let me push down his button over here and say Sona Vista to Dr. Meehan.
Sona Vista.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Were you delayed in traffic? Were you up in Macworld? What was going on there?
There was some traffic delay.
Yeah.
I have I have this apparatus that hangs out of my body, that big catheter.
Oh,
and
okay.
it has to get... I'm
going to start using that nomenclature myself.
A big apparatus that hangs out of your body.
Yeah, exactly.
It's worked for me.
I didn't know we could talk about that on this show.
You can.
Well, it's a podcast. but anyways, they have to flush it out. And because of the vagaries, for you people abroad, the American healthcare system is every bit the nightmare that you've heard it is. So... basically,
and expensive.
Yeah. Well, that's a little part of the nightmare. The expense is that first terrifying feeling of falling before the nightmare begins.
Yes.
But there are people who put a catheter in my jugular vein up in the city in San Francisco, which is a city that's pretty far from where I live by driving. You know, it's not an easy commute city. And then... they told me, well, you know, there's nobody on your plan who can do anything to this down where you are, and you need something done basically every few days. So go down and do you have any friends? Do you have any, like, do you have any nurses who are friends who would do this for you? This is a real conversation. And I said, well, maybe.
Would you be my friend?
Yeah. Well, you know, you're going to have to keep this on the QT because they'd get in real trouble if they ever found out that you were getting this sort of service. Okay, well, I guess I'll ask them, because everyone wants to ask their friend. Would you get in trouble for me? Would you risk...
by flushing out a catheter that goes into my jugular vein?
Right. So anyways, so we got to do it on the QT. We got to do it on the quiet.
The down low.
The down low. It's all... see, you were talking about the Skunk Works operation. This is kind of like a mini Skunk Works where I go in an elite team of secret compadres. Exactly. And we're in and out, and it's like a pit stop at the Indy 500. And but this can take place.
Do they
at
hang a little
times.
Palm tree on your schmengel when you're done?
and then the mileage at that point, so I know when to come back.
On your right nipple, obviously, yeah. That's where you're pointing.
Well, it's funny, people of course are used
nothing
to
we've said so far. Obviously, right. Well, you're going to tell us now what's funny.
Well. Was there funny stuff? Was there?
Apparently not.
Okay, thank God. What's really funny, not the simulated funny, the veneer of funny, is that Now I've forgotten. No, every time there is a visible spot on my covered body. If I wear something that has sort of a loose neckline, you can see these two very obvious sort of sub what's the skin? Derma.
Cutaneous?
Yeah, subdermal kinds of things that are going up into my neck. And people ask, oh my gosh, they kind of look like scars. And I've often been asked, wow, how did you get those scars? And I said, well, actually, it's a catheter. And they just look at me with the strangest expression, like, boy, did they fuck up that thing. Do you have an HMO? Do you
go to Kaiser?
Yeah. Holy cow, that's...
Wow.
Are you going to sue?
Well, you know, I've been dealing with medical crap myself. I mean,
we're the king and queen of medical crap.
And, you know, I don't like to talk about it, not because I'm ashamed or embarrassed by the whole thing, but because it makes me feel like I'm 90, you know? You get into that mindset yeah, where you start sharing your war stories.
It's true.
But
I think we've even had that conversation.
Yeah.
We need to talk about something else.
Something
now,
else, you know? Really. The Bears. How about the Bears. But... the listeners, regular listeners, know that a year and a half ago I had brain surgery for a tumor. It's not a tumor, but it was a tumor. It was a meningioma, a tumor of the lining of the brain, and I went back about a week ago and had that checked out. They do one of these high res MRI things, and then I go to see the doctor who's a brain surgeon. And fortunately, everything that he did is good. There's still a tumor that's up there. It's such a weird thing to know that there's a couple of tumors that are there that they didn't remove. And we're just going to watch them and see whether we want to take them to Broadway
right,
or just kind of, you know.
We're just going to TiVo those tumors.
So, you know, I've gotten okay with the fact that there's stuff inside of me that shouldn't be inside of me, but it's only grown about a millimeter in the last 2 years. And so then you think to yourself, well, that means that at the rate that it's growing, I'd be sort of in my 60s by the time it got to the point where it's probably pressing against things and causing problems. And if you tell somebody that you have a brain tumor when you're in your 40s, they go, oh. But if you tell somebody that you have a brain tumor in your 60s, they go, well, that kind of sucks. But it doesn't have the same awe-inspiring qualities to it, right? Because, and my sister's philosophy, of course, is that's why you should never, ever let anybody look inside your body.
You know, if it works for so many people, except the ones for whom it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't work.
And so I also had kidney cancer. That was about 2.5 years ago. And so I've been getting follow-ups on that. And they did the kidney cancer thing right at the end of last year. And it turned out that when they did that, they found that my kidney looked okay, but my bladder did not look okay. There was something wrong with the bladder. And so, of course, I didn't even bother to read the report until about 11 o'clock that night when I saw the word neoplast, which is tumor. That's a nice way of saying tumor. And I immediately freaked out, and I thought, oh, fuck, you know? Because there is some sense of rightness and wrongness, and that the world has balance. And the fact is, I had brain surgery when I was 28. I had brain surgery a year and a half ago. I had kidney cancer 2 years ago. I had, you know, an emergency appendectomy. I lost my mom. It's like, enough. You're done. But it doesn't work that way at all. And so I keep telling my friends, you know, it's possible that I have bladder cancer.
But if you do, there are two things I think about this. Number one, if you do and you get that fixed, I think you're good for like another 80,000 miles.
Right.
But also, part of your upset is your own fault for education, because you knew the Greek. See, most people just would have said, oh, neoplast. You know, maybe some of the brighter ones would have said, oh, a new plast. That's probably good. That's, you know, that can't be a bad thing.
Meet the new plast.
Same as the old plast, though.
Well, yeah.
Well, but maybe a little different.
And that's
the disturbing part.
And so the way that they can tell whether it is, in fact, a neoplast or something else is that they have to go take a look at it. Now, here's the thing. We don't spend a lot of time talking about gender on this program unless it's right up in front and close to your face. And yesterday it was. Because a cystoscopy is not the kind of thing that is usually had by women. And it is had by men. and it confuses the shit out of the office staff. Why I'm scheduling this. And then when I go in there, she told me to remove my pants, which of course I wasn't wearing. And I said, do you mean my skirt? And she turned this bright red color and she goes, yeah, I'm just used to saying pants.
You're kilt. But don't you think that that, though, frankly, is actually a really offhanded compliment? I mean, you exude femininity. You are, you know, you're a woman. If they weren't confused, that to me would be, oh, something's not, something didn't work out right. You know?
But it's so strange from my point of view to have this sort of brought up close and personal, because I think to myself, you know, I have an entire body, and the part of me that understands who I am is between my ears, right? Not between my legs or between my toes. We'll talk about that some other show. And yet, here I am being forced to deconstruct myself in this way in front of strangers and other people. And I think you get to the point where you just realize, well, I don't give a fuck. And I said that to her. I said, you know, I don't really give a fuck. So whatever you have to do, whatever you have to stick, whatever it is, I had already taken a Xanax and a half, washed it down with a little bit of gin. So I was already, la, 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 la. In fact, I was so fucked up. By the way, Xanax is so cool. And if you're not taking it, you should. That when I came home yesterday with the top down and stuff like that, I left the car out all night long, top down, you know, radar exposed, GPS exposed, the CDs in the front seat exposed, the cell phone, everything just, I just was like, I have stuff to do. I got a whole pizza to eat and a whole piece of chocolate cake to devour, and then I'm going to take a nap and do it again. Do it again, Lord, do it again! Anyhow, so that it turns out that's fine. My bladder is fine, my kidney is fine, my brain is fine. He said it looked a little plump to him. So
isn't that a good thing?
I'm excited about that. The brain tumor from 20 years ago, which scared the hell out of everybody, apparently that's still the way it was. And remarkable. It's always interesting to see people look at your head and just blanch. Medical professionals look at your head and blanch because there is a giant avocado-sized hole in my head. And yet there's nothing wrong with
where the wind comes in.
It stops my mind from wandering.
It's a secret of his success.
Where it will come. All right. So I told everybody else, but I didn't tell you, we've got Ken Koretsky on today.
Oh, outstanding.
Because it turned out that they fucked him on the whole your shit don't stink thing on Red Peters. There was scamming. I know. You looking at me like I'm lying to you, but if I'm lying, I'm dying. We got Jason Nathanson on, who's got a list of things he can't talk about, so it'll be very exciting. And we've got Mark Ehrman from ThinkFilm, who said we can ask him whether Tina Fey is a bitch.
Outstanding.
And what more Michaels is really like. So I've decided that's what we're going to do. We're now going to ask the questions of other guests that previous guests that we couldn't ask. And eventually we'll get all those questions answered. It's a kind of convergence in the media world that we're talking about. What was that?
It was a hawk.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take our first break. We're going to try to get Uncle Jason on the phone. We're going to come back. We'll be talking with him. We've got Monday or the Golden Globes. Did you get your Golden Globe form? You got yours in the other room? If not, you'll go get them during the break.
Yeah.
We'll talk to Jason about that. He's going to be standing on the red carpet watching all the girls go by. Should be very exciting.
Grabbing a few of them.
Are you excited?
I am incredibly excited about the Golden Globes.
All right. It's not just where you were writing your serial number on your nipple.
I'm actually not excited about the Golden Globes. I guess that came through. Probably.
Yeah, I'm not very excited either. And you know why?
Why?
I've seen one movie.
We'll talk about that.
Okay. Maybe two. I'm going to look at the list.
Okay, good. A little show prep.
Yeah. Well, I did get here 2 minutes before 5.
You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Sean Mee, and Sherry Stevens will come back with Jason Nathanson, so stick around.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Shut up.
other land. Learn forever hand in hand. Take it all out on your stride. It is taking voting land. Love forever, love is free. Let's turn forever, you and me. Windmill, windmill for the land. If everybody in.
Laughing gas, these hazmats. Fast cat, lining them up like ass crack. Ladies, ponies at the track. It's my chocolate attack.
Shit, I'm stepping in harder this year.
As I gravitate, ha, 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 ha. We gon' ghost town, this Motown. With your sound, you in the blink. Gon' bite the dust, can't fight with us. With your sound, you kill the ink. So don't stop, get it until you chair the head and watch the way I navigate.
Welcome back. Welcome. Testing. Welcome back. We're 30 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Lodge with the podcast. Robin Goldstein, straight white booze, vegetarian, lesbian, turning boy, trapped in the body of recovering transsexual woman, patent attorney, browser, streamer, match, screen, city planning, www.schnauzerlogic.com. Robin at schnauzerlogic.com. That is the email address. We're also over on myspace.com/schnauzerlogic. We've got a phone number. It's area code 206-666-6540. That is our question line, our answer line, our complaint line. And here's something interesting. We actually got a call this last week. You know, when we were doing our show last week at the very beginning, since it was our first show of 2007, but because today's show, we've got all of these guests, we thought maybe this should be show number 40 and that should be show number 41. And we actually apparently sparked a little bit of controversy. We got a comment on that.
I got to tell you guys, it was very smart to put episode number 40 in front of episode 41, because 40 comes first, and it just makes sense. I would have spent so much time trying to figure out what happened to episode number 40. So take care, guys. I'm Mark Single.
And that's Mark Finkel.
Mark Zinkel, who did some audio for us in the very, very early days of Schnauzer Logic. Mark was a contributor to the show, so it's nice to know that he's out there still listening and that we're not screwing with his head too badly.
It's like the 13th floor. It would be very confusing.
Very, very confusing. Speaking of I'm Mark Zinkel, we have now registered the domain parvis.com, so don't you fuckers try it. So I got one for you.
Yeah.
Spinning the ParvisTheGreat.com. We got one for Parviz, ParvisParvis.com. I probably should register Parviz-Parviz.com just to make sure nobody scams that. We need a domain for you?
Okay, we'll think about that.
Okay, that's... No. Okay, fine.
Well, what would it be?
Well, you tell me.
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
All right. I'll think about it.
Okay, let's play Jason's song now.
Hey, I like that song.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in nothing on.
Yes, he is, the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van. Ladies and gentlemen, you know him, you love him, Dr. Jason Nathanson, son of Easton, my friend.
The bald Jewish guy in the 1988VWVan.com. You can check me out there.
Is that true?
No.
But you will next
week. You're going to give me a website, but that should probably be it. Or JasonHowsYourGrandma.com.
We also have to JasonJasonHowsYourGrandma.com.
And Jason has a theme song, too.
Jason has a theme song. Jason's got his own blog. By the way, you got a lot of controversy over on randomshow.blogspot.com for people who read it on a regular basis like I do. It is a hotbed of activity, my friend.
You know, I'm thinking of turning the comments off, which I should have done from the beginning.
Why?
Censorship!
You know, it's just annoying. I mean, these people come on, and I want them to talk about me, and they're getting into their own conversations about something else.
Yeah?
And it's just annoying.
You know, here's the thing. I think I'm actually responsible for that, because I actually started the last Flame Fest about Anonymous.
Oh, man.
That was me.
Which one are you?
I was the second one that said that everything sucked. The first one said that it was really great, and they made some comment about whatever, and then I said, and I just figured, well, let's not get his head get too big, and so I went the other way.
Well, thanks.
Thanks for that.
Friendship right
I should pull
Appreciate
it up.
It.
Oh, come on, dude.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. And then people like exploded and they started yelling at each other and then there was all this anonymous stuff and then he fully pulled the plug, you puss.
You know, for a blog with 8 readers, it sure does have a lot of controversy.
You're a
on
pussy.
It.
Turn it back on and let people have their voice.
Or just rebrand it strokemyego.com.
I put myself out there and I don't hide too much. Everybody knows who I am. So the least somebody can do is comment. And not have it be anonymous. Put your name, put some identity to your comment. I mean, that's not too much to ask.
It is. It's funnier when I can fuck with you from the side. I'm not touching you. Just turn it back on again. On behalf of all of your readers, I implore you not to be a pussy. The whole purpose of the internet is it's free expression. And by the way, you know, you've been in radio for how many years now? Almost 10 years?
Almost
10 years in radio. Can you pay any attention to the people that call or write? They're the whack jobs.
No, but, I mean, there's something more intimate about a blog. I mean, I really feel like it's kind of, at this point, it's not a trip diary anymore. So it's kind of my diary of my life. And it's
Mom,
very
I'm on the phone, Mom. I'm on the phone. Hang up, Mom. Sorry.
It's a personal thing. It, you know, and I like when people come on and, you know, tell me great things about myself. I have an ego just like anybody else. But, you know, the negative stuff does get to me. I'm human. And so, you know, don't post anonymously, pricks. That's all I have to say.
All right. Well, I'm just going to tell you that you suck to your face from now on.
Thank you.
So, 1 to 100. Tell us about that.
Well, I wish I could. But you're a lawyer, and you understand. I had to sign massive confidentiality.
And what are they going to do if you break the confidentiality? I mean, let's really talk about this.
Honestly, I can't even tell you what they'll do, or that would be breaking the confidentiality.
Is this call coming from Gitmo?
And I understand nothing really bad is going to happen to me. They're probably not going to, you know, do anything. They might not even realize that I'm doing this show. But when the show comes closer, it's going to air February 3rd. I'm putting in a request that I can go on certain shows. Yours will be one of them. So they'll have to check these things out. And they said that I can't talk about anything, and they brought a lawyer in from some company to kind of put the fear of God in
you. Start a hunger strike.
Bullshit. They do that all the time.
I get that. I totally understand. But you know what? It's not worth it. What's the risk reward for me?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you didn't win any money, so what the hell difference does it make?
You don't know that I didn't.
I did, because if you won any money, we would not be having this conversation.
You don't know that.
I do. You'd be with hookers.
But I can still find 15 minutes between stroking and unloading.
Amazing refractory time on this young man. Amazing.
Oh, man. All right.
I'm going to assume once again that you played that and I didn't hear it. Yeah.
Always the same assumption. All right, so what do you want to talk about this week?
Well, we can talk about the Golden Globes, which are coming up next
Monday. Golden Globes. I'm looking right here at the nominees, and Sherry and Sean had a similar opinion about the whole thing, which is that...
Really? See, I like the of all the award shows, I like the Golden Globes the most because they drink during it.
Motion picture drama. Have you seen Babel?
No, I haven't.
You seen Bobby?
No, I haven't.
The Departed?
Yes, I have seen The Departed.
Little Children?
No.
The Queen?
No.
Okay, that's my point.
And The Departed will win because that's the one I've seen.
In the Bill Murray School of...
Didn't see it.
But the Golden Globes also encompasses television, which is something I talk about on this show.
That's because the foreign press can't tell the difference between TVs and movies, apparently.
But some of the TV shows are better than the movies. And the people who do the awards, who accept the awards from television, are always funnier than the people from the movies. The movie people take themselves really seriously, and that's something you can also see from the award shows themselves, because I'm supposed to go to the Oscars as well.
Not only do they take themselves seriously, but it's interesting you should mention that. It's very clear that movie people are stuck without a script. That for the most part, movie people, if they don't have the lines written down and memorized, they have no idea what the fuck they're going to do. I think because they have these long periods of time, and television people are turning out work constantly, they become much more adept at thinking on their feet.
Absolutely, and especially the television people on comedies, a lot of them come from a sketch comedy or improv background. So they're used to thinking on their feet. A lot of the movie actors... they're classically trained at the stupid schools that they go to, and they have to have a script in order to emote. So, I mean, that's a very good point.
They are stupid schools.
The Tishman stupid school, I think, is the...
I use the stupid method.
Stupidowski. Classical Stupidowski method.
No, but it's true. You can see it on Saturday Night Live.
Globes, which is very exciting.
And the Oscars, too?
Probably the Oscars. They haven't announced the credentials. We've put in for my credentials, so I'll know on that, but probably.
Credentials? What?
You have to, you know, when you're with a media organization, you have to submit your social security number, your driver's license, all that stuff.
Not anybody can put on an ill-fitting rented tux and just walk on the red.
Not just anybody can go. They do bomb sweeps. I mean, they're very tight because... you know,
hey, they did bomb sweeps for Danny Gann's theater, okay? So I'm a lot less impressed now than I was.
What's a bomb sweep?
Sweep. You check all your equipment when you come in to make sure that
you're make you walk through a metal detector.
You're not a terrorist trying to blow up the cast of 24.
Like a bill of materials? A bomb.
So you now have a tuxedo, is that right?
I rented a tuxedo, yes. And I went to try it on today, and it fits like such crap.
Give a plug to the place you went to, by the way.
I went to After Hours, which is on Ventura and Whitsitt.
Very nice.
Valley.
Ventura and what's it?
Whitsitt.
Okay.
And which is apparently where the whole crew of Access Hollywood is getting their tuxedos, because I can't pick mine up on Monday like I wanted to, because all the bastards at Access Hollywood are getting theirs on Monday, so screw them.
What happens when they pick up their tuxedos? I mean, they close the place down for a circle jerk?
There's 50 of them. There's 50 of them from Access Hollywood, apparently.
So apparently the answer is yes.
So, you know, why don't you just, this is clearly going to be your bread and butter. You need to just go to Men's Warehouse and get yourself a cheap tux, get out of this, get it tailored, and you won't look like a doofus.
That's what I was thinking about. I had to get this one too quickly to be able to kind of look around for something that I wanted and get it tailored in time. So I'm probably going to end up buying one. And I mean, after putting on this one today, I'm definitely going to end up buying one because I look like such an idiot.
So do you get to stick a microphone in people's faces and ask them questions, or do you basically, are you even further behind the scenes?
Yeah, no, I get to kind of, we're trying to figure out the roles, but basically I'm going to be a producer. We have two on-air personalities who are going to be there, one in the interview room where they bring all the actors after they've won an award, and then one person who's going to be kind of monitoring the broadcast and breaking in with who just won what. And that person will also be roaming around with the microphone, and I will have a microphone as well, trying to get, you know, some kind of interesting sound. I probably won't appear on air anywhere. But I'll try to be asking questions, the provocative questions to get... You know,
I'm making
answers.
This offer on the air in front of the Schnauzer Logic, and you know we have a standing offer of $20 every time you mention my name in the news report, which you have pushed out on. I'm raising the stakes here, my friend. $500.
For a mention during the Golden Globes?
For a mention of my name during the Golden Globes, and it can be, was Robin Goldstein instrumental in the making of this picture, or, you know, how did Robin Goldstein influence you? $500. $500.
Wow.
Got to be on the air. $500.
Wow. See, if you would have mentioned this to me off the air, I might have done it. But now that it's on the air...
$1,000. I'll give you $1,000.
Deal or no deal.
$1,000. I got the $1,000. Everybody's hearing it, and we can deny it jointly.
I was going to give him $30 if he'd grope a celebrity, and I didn't care about gender or anything. Age, gender, it was all in play. But now you've totally hosed my plan. It's meaningless now.
Well, you can still do that for $30. So you can make $1,030 at the Golden Globes.
Is this per time? So if I do it four times, I get $4,000?
I love that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
But okay. It has to be on camera.
Yeah. I mean, you can't just be, right, you can't just ask Steve Carell in the bathroom, how has Robin Goldstein influenced your life?
And the groping,
I mean,
that also has to be on camera.
Okay, I think
that you should also include something like, you know, make it really good, sell it. How did the early work of Robin Goldstein, you know?
So are you excited about this?
Yeah, I am. I've never gone to an award show behind the scenes before. The last actual award show I went to was the American Music Awards when I was 14, and Color Me Bad, I think, performed, and that was awesome.
And how do you prepare for this?
Just kind of go through, get as much information you can on the different nominees in case, you know, whoever wins, you have something kind of interesting to say for the people that are going to be on the air, so I can feed them some info. And basically, this is kind of more of a dry run for the Oscars, just for my first time to see kind of how an award show works and see what ideas I can come up with the Oscars. Because the Oscars are, that's the big enchilada.
You want to be able to identify Judi Dench at the Oscars and hear if...
Exactly.
From Judy Tenuta. You want to be able to make that distinguishing between Judy Dench and Judy Tenuta?
Right. Which one's Judy Dench? Which one's Helen Mirren? They're both old. They're both British. But you got to be able to figure out which one is which.
Well, one's still kind of hot. That's
No, that would be Prince Charles.
That's the mistake I've been making. Okay.
Is that Parviz who said that?
No, Parviz is not here today.
We're all filling in for him.
We're all filling in for Parviz today.
That was a good imitation.
God bless his little heart. So of the categories, so I'm looking here at the categories, and as you mentioned, it's kind of an interesting mishmash, right? It's picture, and they're not the same categories as they have in the Oscars. For example, there's a Best Motion Picture Drama, and that's different from a Best Motion Picture Musical or a Comedy.
Right. And for those who aren't aware of the Golden Globes, I mean, it's a big, it's kind of like the Oscars where they give out all these awards, but you come and sit down and the stars are fed dinner and they're sitting at round tables. So it's not as stuffy and there's a bar and people are drinking. So it's a little looser.
And it's the Foreign Press Association.
And it's the Foreign Press, which, you know, gets derided here and there. Some people say that, you know, they don't know what they're voting on and they shouldn't be voting, but, you know.
Now, what do you think is the most interesting nomination so far?
The most interesting nomination.
Or the most surprising nomination.
Or
the nomination that you hope will win.
Well, I mean...
I'll just keep throwing shit out till you start answering.
they put Borat in there in a couple places.
Yes, they did. That was one I was going for.
And I thought... First of all, when they did the announcements, they had to say the whole name of the picture. So the poor girl who had to do it, she had to say Borat for Cultural Learnings of an American Stupid People, whatever it was. So that was
it is Borat, cool. Cultural Learnings of America for Make Benefit Glorious Nation of Kazakhstan.
Right, and every time she said that, it got a big laugh.
So right away, it was brilliant.
Right, and I hope that wins. One, because... people don't really know what Sacha Cohen looks like. They expect Borat, and he looks kind of different.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting. I wonder how many people in the press will just pass him up not knowing who he is. On
Look,
the
it's Judi Dench.
Or Prince Charles.
I think one of the most surprising in the Best Actress category for musical or comedy is Beyonce. I don't really think she belongs. I mean, she's in a group with Annette Bening, Toni Collette, Meryl.
You want to tell us what film she's nominated for?
Dreamgirls.
Okay.
So yeah, Annette Bening, Toni Collette, Meryl Streep, and Renee Zellweger. Which one of these does not belong? I think Beyonce.
One of them does not belong in my bedroom? It would not be Beyonce. She would be there.
She would be there.
Now, this caught my eye. Under Best Foreign Language Film,
mm-hmm.
Mel Gibson's Apocalypto.
It's all in a foreign language. It was produced here, but it's
I all, guess.
It's all in a different language. Well, and I did Letters from Iwo Jima, which is the Clint Eastwood movie.
Right.
Is also a foreign language film. I didn't see it, so, I mean, maybe it is. So, but that caught me by surprise as well.
Gotcha. And now the other part is that, as you mentioned, they do films and they do television. Now,
yeah.
There's something that you obviously know a lot more about.
Right. And the Best Television for Drama.
Nominees, 24, Big mm-hmm. Love, Grey's Anatomy, Heroes, and Lost.
Grey's Anatomy should not be in that category because it's really kind of a comedy drama, and they do have room for that. Like, Desperate Housewives is in the comedy category. I think 24 is going to take it. I don't think the other ones are as strong, although I like Heroes more as a television show to watch, and I like Lost. Big Love is good. That's the HBO series about Mormons, but it's not that strong, and 24 is a real crowd favorite, so I think that's going to win.
It has Bill Paxton, too. Big Love has Bill Paxton, which is a reason to vote against him.
Not to be confused with Bill Pullman, which I do all the time.
Or Judi Dench.
Or Judy Tenuta. Prince Charles, anyone? Anyone, Prince Charles?
Anakin.
And then Best Performance by an Actress in a Television Series, Patricia Arquette for Medium, Edie Falco, The Sopranos, and I think she's the one that's going to win. The others are Evangeline Lilly from Lost, who's the hottest one in the group, Ellen Pompeo from Grey's Anatomy, and Kira Sedgwick from The Closer. Well, everybody says it's very good, by the way. Kira Sedgwick is supposed to be amazing in the show. I haven't seen it because it's on TNT, and I don't even know what channel that is.
Well, it's basic cable, and she is very good. It's a very interesting procedural. It's one of those. It's one of the things that basic cable has been doing, like Rescue Me, for example, and The Closer and mm-hmm. Monk. They've sort of taken a little bit. They've put a bit of an edge back into a procedural kind of dramas.
And unfortunately, those shows don't get the kind of promotion that they should. I mean, I've been hearing about The Closer for, I think it's been on 2 or 3 years now.
A couple seasons.
And it's been getting, I mean, across the board, great reviews. But most people don't even know it exists. And that's, you know, that's part of the promotion fault of TNT. I definitely think Edie Falco is the strongest in that category for The Sopranos.
What else you got going on? What else should we be talking about this week?
Well, I mentioned a couple weeks ago...
By the way, I'm just going to ask quickly, did you see the People's Choices Awards last night?
I didn't see the People's Choices Awards last night, no.
Well, whatever the hell it is.
No,
hosted by Queen Latifah, right?
Yes, sure.
And that's pretty...
I'm just going to agree with you because I don't know.
Okay. And were you surprised that the... no, I don't know. I can't even think of anything right now.
There was nothing surprising happened. The People's Choice Awards are one of the most boring awards.
No,
I
have a question, a legitimate question about television. Tonight, I think we have a premiere of Armed and Famous.
Yes.
Where celebrities or B-grade celebrities, kind of.
Very good.
I don't know if they've gone to the police academy or something, but apparently they will be.
Dun, 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 dun.
They will be in uniform, and we will follow them through their adventures, escapades, hijinks, what have you, as they go out on real police calls with real law enforcement authority. Now, am I getting this right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's just a recipe for somebody B-level to get shot, which is what I think everybody's hoping for.
Let it happen.
And they get $20.
On television, yeah. I think this is on CBS, if I'm not mistaken. And
CBS.
It's just their attempt, once again, to come late to genre, reality television.
Isn't this a new kind of genre, though? Celebrity surgeon or something like that? I mean, we could have a celebrity
kinda,
pilot.
Most of the networks, Gary Coleman,
rewire your second bedroom.
Most of the networks have stopped with this kind of reality programming in favor of, you know, the crime scene dramas and things like that. So I'm kind of surprised to see that they're putting something like this on. I mean, it looks horrendous, and it looks like a train wreck, which is why people will probably watch it. I'll probably TiVo it and watch it myself.
I'm hoping there's trouble in one of the wife swap households, and one of the celebrity cops has to go check it out. Some kind of domestic abuse report.
Well, but here's the thing. They have a punch. They have Eric Estrada, right?
Right, who's not a cop, but he played one on TV.
And now he's playing a cop. That's a little too confusing for me.
It's kind of that world within a world
reality. It is. It's a world within a world within a world.
You can only get on television.
It's be like having William Shatner come back as T.J. Hooker in a cop.
Right.
And then T.J. Hooker shows up to break up your marital dispute or whatever it is.
And then beams up once everything's done.
It's very uncomfortable to me.
You need a French philosopher to figure this out.
Listen, we're coming up on the end of the time as well, but I also wanted to ask you about what's going on in your own particular radio career. I know that last time we spoke, you were leaving Schnauzer Logic to do a show with Sam and Dave, and
Sam and Dave, the founders of Pizza Hut, I think.
Yeah, that's right. No, they're actually a blues kind of, but you're too young to know that.
Yes.
Yeah, you're thinking of the little animated guys.
Yes, that's all I know. Those are the
successors to the Noid.
I was supposed to start a new podcast, which has been put off because of football season, and I won't get into why that is. But football season has delayed that.
What does that mean?
It means he's a radio widow.
I was going to do it with Sam Batesh, a good friend who I did a show with in Santa Cruz.
Sam Batesh.
I met Robin originally. And
I'm Sam Batesh.
He's a producer for Fox Sports Radio. And we were going to use the Fox Sports Radio studios on Saturday night. But football playoffs means we can't use the studios right now. So.
And this comes as a big surprise to Sam Batesh that football actually is not over yet.
He's not a very good producer. He's a nice guy.
The studios would be occupied.
Because even I know that the Super Bowl isn't until the end of January. I mean, and I don't know nothing about nothing.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe he's not that good a producer. Okay. let's say it, all right? Let's say it out loud.
All right. So you and Sammy Boy are, you're putting that off.
So we're putting that off.
But meanwhile.
Yeah, I had applied for an ad I saw on All Access, which is the radio trade site, for some guys in San Diego on the free FM station there, which is the FM talk stations. They used to have Howard Stern, and now they have Adam Carolla or some mix of, you know, 70s pop singer. And they needed a co-host for one of the shows. So I sent him some of my stuff, including some stuff I did on Schnauzer Logic, and he really liked it. So I will be this Saturday kind of sitting in with them. From
are you driving down there?
What?
You driving down?
Yeah, I'm driving down there.
Oh, man.
Look for the van.
All right. Hey, listen, you got to grab an air check of the whole thing and then ship it off to me here.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll throw it up online.
I will. So that will be, if any listeners in the San Diego area, that's 103.7 FM.
Put the call-in numbers on your blog, because even if we're not in the area, we can anonymously call in and be part of the conversation. It'll be hysterical.
For this show. You have to give your name.
All right, my friend. Listen, we love you, and we wish you great success. And I'm sorry that you weren't able to make any money on 1 to 100. But
we don't know that. The producers are listening. I said nothing.
I do know that.
I said nothing.
I do know that. Your voice would be at least half an octave higher. I know how that works.
Well, maybe I won money and got the surgery to fix that. You don't know.
Well, you got funnier, so something's changed. Are you doing KSCO tomorrow morning?
That's still up in the air, because I'll be working tomorrow morning. So.
All right, fine. All right, well, I'm going to see Rosie on Friday, so I'll tell her that you say hi.
No, please don't, actually.
What the hell is that all about?
Another attempt at humor.
Oh. Maybe you didn't get the surgery. All right, listen, take care and have a lot of fun on the weekend, and we'll chat with you next week for sure, all right?
Thanks. Talk to you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. That $1,000 is probably looking real sweet to him right now. I just figured I'd just keep raising the money till the point where you go, holy shit. You would do it, wouldn't you?
I wouldn't need any financial incentive. I just want to fuck with a celebrity.
Well, we're going to have an opportunity when we get back. Actually, he's not a celebrity in his own right, but he knows a lot of famous people. We're going to take a break at this point. We're going to come back. We'll be talking with Mark Ehrman, who is the head of Think Films U.S. Theatrical Distribution, Theatrical Division, and very excited about this.
He'll be a celebrity after the next few minutes.
Yes, he will. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Sean, me, and Sherry Stevens, we are all inviting you to please stick around. By the way, all the songs we're playing today are from the Top 100 Billboard of 2006. And this is, it was so hard for me to find songs that I like. I'll tell you about how I used to be addicted to this stuff when we get back. All right, stick around.
Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic.
The moment we need it the most. You kick up the leaves and the magic is lost. A town where your blue skies fade to gray. A town where your passion's gone away. And I don't need no care or none. You stand in the light just to hit a new low. You're faking a smile with the coffee to go. And tell me your life's been way offline. You fall into pieces every time. And I don't need no care or none. Cause you have. You had a bad day.
Fun than flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Ah! Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're about a minute into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic. Being recorded on Wednesday, it is the 10th of January, 2007. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal, www.schnauzerlogic.com. Sean Meehan, son of Vista, my friend.
Son of Vista.
Sherry Stevens, son of Vista.
Son of Vista.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited. We've had, when we were doing our last show of 2006, we ran down a listing of all the people that we had as guests on the show, and it was an amazing number of folks.
And it was a respectable list, too.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people who really delivered.
Well-known people, people in the various industries, arts, entertainment, metalwork, you know, we had the head of the plumbing union of the entire state of California. Big time, big deal stuff. You guys know that. I mean, you too, of course. I love film. Pretty much anything that gets passed in front of my eyes, I'm willing to sort of give it a little bit of a look and a listen and see what it's all about. I like the stuff that gets sent about everywhere, and I like the indie stuff. I like the experimental stuff. I like the stuff that you don't find in places. Netflix is very nice because as a result of Netflix, you can get films that you don't easily see in small art houses or the repertory houses, things of that nature that I remember from my college days. And the other thing, of course, is that when you go to the Blockbuster, instead of looking at the wall of 10,000 copies of Nacho Libre, they also have, you know, usually a film or two that's something small that you haven't seen that maybe was in the theaters in San Francisco for a weekend or two weekends and it was gone again. And on a recent trip to the local Hollywood Video, I picked up a film called Looking for Kitty with Ed Burns and David Krumholtz. And you know who Ed Burns is by name for sure and reputation. And David Krumholtz, you would recognize immediately if you saw him. A young actor, terrific actor. And so I picked this thing up and I put it in and then I read the little thing. It's an Ed Burns film. They didn't have a lot of money. They shot the whole thing, he says, for about $200,000. On DV, very simple master shots, two shots, that's the whole thing, but the story was compelling. And you and I both took Robert McKee's class on story, which we don't often admit because we're both kind of embarrassed that we sat through that, nevertheless. As I sat through this thing, I realized that it wasn't the production value, you know, it wasn't the lighting, it wasn't the fact that they didn't have covered shots, you know, between one scene and another scene. I didn't really care about that. This is a compelling story, and it was told in a compelling way. A small story, for sure, not a very big story, a small story about a couple of characters and how they interact with each other. And I realized as I was watching this thing that it was from Think Film, which is a small indie distribution house. And I thought to myself, I've seen that logo before. In fact, I think I've seen that logo a lot. And I realized that, like, only in the last 6 months, I've seen Looking for Kitty, When Stand Up Stood Out, The Aristocrats, Murder Ball, I Love Your Work, Brawn Into Brothels, Bright Young Things, Festival Express, Primer. These were all...
And might I say, what a list.
And that's just the films that I saw.
Right.
And so I...
Top-notch stuff.
All interesting, all different things that obviously are award-winning, award-nominated, well-known. So this is not just sort of I want to say a label. This is not a studio or a distribution company that you're not hearing about, right? They're doing really interesting things. And it occurred to me at that moment, I thought, there's a reason that I'm enjoying these films. There must be an aesthetic, a philosophy, a vision that goes into choosing these films from the festival circuit or wherever these films come from. It turns out, through a mutual friend, Myra Binstock, a good friend of mine, Myra knows one of the founders of Think Film, Mark Ehrman. And so I said to Myra, would you make an introduction? Let me try to pitch my case to Mark to have him on the show. Mark foolishly said yes. And so right now, on our line, if we're any lucky at all, is Mark Ehrman of Think Film. Son of Easton, welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Thank you.
How was that introduction? We do okay?
It was great, yeah.
And all true. Now, I'm looking here at the bio, the official Think Film bio. Mark Ehrman head Think Film's U.S. Theatrical Division. Think Film was founded in September of 2001. It's released to include all those films I mentioned, plus The Dangerous Lives of Altar Boys, Gus Van Zandt's Jerry, the Oscar-nominated Spellbound, Jonathan Demme's The Agronomist, Bright Young Things, The Assassination of Richard Nixon, and Paul Provenza's The Aristocrats. You've got a long history in the industry. You used to
be a co-president of Lionsgate Film Releasing, and we're responsible for overseeing films like Affliction, God and Monsters, Buffalo 66, The Red Violin, Dogma, and American Psycho, more than a few of my favorite films in there. You were also executive producer on Monsters Ball. And prior to that, you were at Dennis Davidson Associates, and before that, you were at Columbia Pictures. So it looks like you've spent a good part of your career in the film industry, and we're thrilled to have you here on Schnauzer Logic and talk to you a little bit about, really, as I mentioned to you in the email, sort of the process that you go through in choosing the films that become part of Think Film's release.
Well, you know, as anybody who has been listening could gather, it's actually very eclectic. And while I think the vast majority of our titles are very high quality, and they've entered, you know, the sort of cultural dialogue in different ways, and some of them did very well in theaters, and some of them didn't do so well in theaters, but linger and have a very nice life on DVD and on television and elsewhere. You know, we some of it is frankly just opportunistic. We're trying to build a company. The company is now 5 years old, and I've been in the business my entire career. I literally went from college to a movie studio more years ago than I care to admit, and I've made a lot of contacts and relationships, and I've developed a personal reputation. The small team of executives that founded Think Film and who had worked together before also are people who have credibility and a track record. So together and separately, we present an opportunity for filmmakers who, if they want to do something a little different, or if they have done something a little different and it doesn't easily enter the machinery of the business, and it is a machine, and it is a grinding machine, and very often movies are just turned into dust by the terrible pressures, economic and otherwise, of this vast machine. They find it nice to work with a company such as ours, where people who are, as you said, it's an independent film company. That's a choice. It's not as if we've been set adrift like a chunk of land that gets separated from the continent. We're people who want to be independent, and part of that is a function of our personalities. I'm certainly somebody who, after spending the first 15 years of my career working for major Hollywood studios, I want to know who I'm working with. I want to know who I'm working for. It's a small bunch of people. I want my taste to be respected. I want to spend my time working on things that I like, that motivate me, and I want their success or failure to be completely connected to my efforts. You know, and if I was wrong, or if I did a bad job, so goes it. Nobody's going to scream at me. And if I did a good job, then people like you ask to talk to me on the radio. But it does come down to the fact that we're people who've worked together. The core group are people who've worked together for a very long time, some of us for well over a decade, because we were together at Lionsgate and built that up to a very interesting level. And we know one another's taste. We have a sort of unwritten law within the company that we go with our passion. If somebody is excited about a film and its prospects, and it doesn't appear as if it will cause us to lose our shirts, we go with it. And if somebody is not adamantly against it, then why the hell not? And more often than not, at least two or three of us of a group of maybe, what, four or five at any given point whose opinions matter anyway, will agree, and we'll see things in the same way because we know who we are, we know what we do well. As the head of the theatrical division, it's my job, after we, as a small group, determine what movie we're going to release, it's my job to bring it into the world, and I determine when and how and why and at what cost it is actually distributed. And I've been doing it a very long time, and so from the moment I see a film, I'm thinking, even as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, can I sell it? What would sell it? What would motivate a journalist to write about it? What would motivate a customer to pay $10 to see it? And somehow, we find more than enough movies to release.
Are there sort of broad categorical strategies for different kinds of films? I mean, is there sort of a strategy based on the demographic you think that a film is going to appeal to, or is each film truly an individual adventure in terms of how to get it out to the public?
I would say that quite honestly, each film is individual, and every campaign, top to bottom, is customized to the film. That said, I am somebody who, for want of a better word, is veteran. I've learned a lot, and a lot of it the hard way. And so one uses one's experience to you bring it to bear, and you use other films that you've worked on as antecedents. But one thing that is more true now than ever, because the business is changing, the industry is changing, the modes of delivery to consumers are changing so rapidly, literally at the sort of pace that could give you the bends, that it does nobody any good to be dogmatic and say, well, you know, back in the day I did it this way. I try to forget more of my past experience than to remember it and go with my gut. But you really, everything about the way in which a film is distributed is specific to the film and to the moment. What competition is out there, what other kinds of films are out there, what's happening in the zeitgeist. Are people feeling apprehensive, or are people feeling ready for a challenge? And you have to pick the time, you have to pick the pace. You know, do you go in a lot of theaters, do you go in a few theaters, do you go in a lot of cities, do you go slowly? And you look at the film. Is it going to get good reviews? Who is your customer? If you feel that it's somebody of a certain, you know, sort of age, a certain level of life. I mean, there are certain films that simply don't work for people in their 20s. They haven't lived long enough. But thank God there are still a lot of people above 30 who go to the movies, and they get a lot of movies that youngsters just don't. I like to think that I'm very young at heart, but, you know, my heart has been bruised enough so that I respond to different kinds of movies than some of the people who work for me who just, you know, they don't get it.
So you would use very different marketing strategies for a film that, based on the kind of media, perhaps, that the potential viewer, would be looking at. I imagine that a 22-year-old...
The way you get a 20-year-old to see a movie is completely different from the way you get, you know, a 35-year-old to see a movie, and a lot of it has to do with how to get their attention. The only way to get a 20-year-old's attention is to make a film unavoidable. It has to play everywhere, and it has to be advertised absolutely everywhere all the time. It has to be omnipresent. A 35-year-old, all it takes is a rave review in a good newspaper, and he might go to see it. And that doesn't really cost you anything.
So, saturation is with the youth.
You had mentioned obviously that the industry continues to change at a sort of a vertigo inducing rate.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in the really on both ends of it, in how the product is consumed, if you will. I mean, yesterday Steve Jobs announced this new iPhone, which clearly has the ability to play movies on it in a little widescreen format. iPod is already being able to do that. CES is this week in Las Vegas, and they're all kinds of portable players there. Home theaters, I know a lot of people that got big screen TVs this year for Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and Festivus. And on the other hand, you're now seeing the proliferation of high-def portable camcorders and Final Cut Express. And so anybody, you know, with a dream and a mini DV tape can make a film, whether it's a story or not, is something altogether different. Does this make your life easier? Does it make it more difficult or just more interesting?
All of the above. it makes it easier in a way because everything is more democratic and good movies come from more places and there are so many more sources of interesting product. I've released two films now that each cost under $10,000 and were made exactly as you described, like homemade movies, spontaneously combusted movies. But something that makes things very difficult is that now, the same way having a typewriter is not does not make you a writer, having a camera does not make you a filmmaker or a storyteller. And sometimes I really wish people needed a license before they were allowed to make a movie. There is so much crap that, you know, just because it runs 87 minutes or longer, you call it a feature, and it doesn't have to cost anything. Again, a film like The Aristocrats, which was very successful and I think very good, didn't cost anything. It was made with a consumer camera, the sort
right.
that you would buy, you know, for $400 or $500 at a you know, a Best Buy,
mm-hmm.
and the rest of it was, you know, friends agreeing to talk to the filmmakers for, you know, 15 minutes at a time over a few year period. It was a cost-free movie, but that didn't make it a talent-free movie. It didn't make it a star-free movie. There were over 100 performers in that movie, many of them very, very well-known and recognizable, and some of them huge superstars. And, you know, the film was about something, and the film was wildly entertaining and you know, really engaging. But just because you have that $400 camera doesn't mean that your friends are interesting and that, you know, a movie consisting of interviews of them telling a joke, dirty, clean, or otherwise, is going to be of interest to anybody other than you. There are 8-year-olds making feature films now, and I don't think their grandparents want to see those movies. So there's just so much product to wade through, and there really are more films getting commercially distributed than ever before, more small films, more sort of, you know, out-of-the-woodwork films, and that creates an enormous amount of static. And then the reaction there is that more people are actually exercising some caution, and they're seeing more a little later. In the old days, movies would, you know, before home entertainment, I remember back in the 70s, movies would play for, you know, 52 weeks, you know, a hit art film, you know,
sure.
Howard's End played mm-hmm. for over a year. La Cage aux Folles, the first one, you know, played on Third Avenue in Manhattan for over a year.
King of Hearts played in Boston outside of the Cambridge Theater for, I don't know, 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I remember Room with a View played all through my high school years.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredible.
It's true. But now, you know, basically the people who are slow to move and maybe they see other things, maybe they're interested in other things, maybe they go to the opera, maybe they go to a concert, maybe there is one television series they like to stay home and watch per week. It's you don't necessarily want to rush out. Maybe you want to pick up a book. And, you know, God damn it, these days, the fourth month of a movie's release is called a DVD. And so that's fine, you know, as long as I have a way of deriving revenue from the people's encounter with the movie, you know, that they, if they get it from Netflix or if they go into a Blockbuster or if they buy the DVD, I'm still deriving revenue from it. And, you know, they're still seeing the movie. But it's only, these days, it's only like 4 months later. And if I have a choice between going out of an evening and it's an expensive undertaking to see something that, you know, it could be a homemade piece of crap or it could be a life-altering work of art, I may not take the gamble. I may go see the safe, sound, proven thing that, mm-hmm. that you know I'm going to like it. You know, that Dame Judi Dench is cute as a button. I'll go see that. And, you know, this little thing called Primer that won a prize at Sundance, I think that that's a DVD for me. And that's okay. You know, that's fine. But it if you only have to wait 4 months, that's an easy decision.
Right.
In the old days, if, you know, not only was there no such thing as DVD, but, you know, you had a year to make up your mind. Eventually, you'd hear something good about it. Eventually, you'd go.
Right.
It's all changed. And everything, the whole, you know, sort of digestive tract of the entertainment business is much more rapid.
We're talking with Mark Ehrman, who is the head of Think Films U.S. Theatrical Division, and you guys got a website. It's www.thinkfilm.com, where there is a listing of the roster of films that you have available on DVD and also films that are out in the theaters right now. You were talking also about how you acquire films. One of the films which is now up for some awards, or certainly the lead actor, is... Don't stop me here. I'll tell you what it is.
It's Half Nelson.
No, please. I actually started watching it today. And very powerful, very compelling, dark, I think. But this is a film that I had not heard of. I don't know whether it got distribution here in the San Francisco Bay Area, certainly down south. But I pulled some clips from Metacritic. Let's see. At a time when most American movie studios made independent seems more divorced from anything approximating actual life experience, Half Nelson is so sobering and a searingly truthful that watching it feels like being tossed from a calm beach into a raging current. New York Times, what makes Half Nelson both unusual and exceptional American film, particularly at a time when films about 9/11 are professed to have no politics, is its insistence on political consciousness and moral imperative. Village Voice said the audacity of making an inner-city drama in which the white male authority figure is the crackhead finds its equal in Gosling's already legendary performance, a high-wire act that's gutsiest for its unconscionable charm. Of course, the New York Post said, too bad there's only about half an hour's worth of story here. Mostly we just get to watch a teacher get high, his classroom talks about civil rights, and there's nothing but filler. So.
No. Well, there are no boobs, explosions, or boobs in there. It hurt the film.
The New York Post that's probably one of three negative reviews of the film.
Well, I had to pull one just because I was surprised because it is on Metacritic. Rotten Tomato was down today. I'm sure I'd find the same thing. It had sort of a 90%.
Rotten Tomatoes did their annual roundup, and I think that Half Nelson scored 7 among the most critically approved films of the year, and number 3, I believe, among all dramas. It's received extraordinarily good reviews.
And Ryan Gosling, as you pointed me to, is been nominated for a Screen Actors Guild Award, Outstanding Performance by a Male Actor in a Leading Role. I'm not surprised. As I watched about 40 minutes of the film, and I'm not surprised. It's a riveting performance. It's nuanced. It's lovely. It's not necessarily easy to watch, but it's the kind of film that I really enjoy because there's story, there's character, and everything else just kind of falls away. How did you acquire that?
Well, the film had its world premiere last year, and it's almost exactly a year ago at the Sundance Film Festival in the dramatic competition. You know, we go to Sundance and we go to buy movies, and I saw it at its very first screening. I was completely blown away by the film. I thought it was exquisite, really as good as American independent films get. I actually didn't find it that dark or challenging. It's about a young man who's sort of like screwing up. And young men do, and it ends hopefully, and it ends on a real redemptive note. And I just had an amazing time. And I for a few years, I thought that Ryan Gosling was sort of awesome. And in this movie, I really had the sort of sensation that I remember feeling when I saw very early Robert De Niro performances. And he was, you know, 24 when he made the movie, 25 when I saw it, or just barely. He's just turned 26 now. And you imagine a career, you imagine the sort of performances he'll be able to give you over, the years to come. And the young filmmakers who are a boyfriend-girlfriend team, also, you know, young people under 30, NYU film school students. The director, in fact, was raised in Berkeley, or in Oakland, actually, in Oakland. And so, you know, we just instantly, sort of attacked the William Morris agency and the filmmakers and said, "We love your movie. You must sell it to us." And lo and behold, they did. And at the end of Sundance, IndieWire, which is you know what IndieWire is? They did an independent poll of the top 50 critics and journalists mm-hmm. who were at Sundance last year, and by a wide margin, Half Nelson was voted the best film, and Ryan the best actor, and the young girl who plays opposite him as his student, Sharika Epps, was voted best actress.
She is phenomenal. By the way. Right. And I guess they found her while they were casting sort of a smaller version of this film?
Yeah, they wrote the script when they were film students and had absolutely no access to money to finance a feature, so they decided to go off with friends with one of those little cameras and make a short film that was sort of derived from the core of the mm-hmm. script, Half Nelson. And, it's about 20 minutes or 17 minutes long, but they needed a girl, and they got this, you know, non-professional girl, and when it came time to make the feature, the short showed at Sundance, it won a prize, they got agents, they got access to money, they raised the money to produce the film, and were encouraged to go out and find a real child actress, and they saw many, and it was just, nobody was as good as little Sharika, so they went back to where they started.
Yeah.
And it just worked out beautifully for everybody, and Ryan has already gotten a number of prizes and accolades, and the film has been on nearly 110 best lists nationwide. It actually played in active release for, you know, those proverbial 4 months. It's about to come out on DVD, but it did quite well in San Francisco, in fact, and in most major cities in America. It did solidly in most suburbs. It wasn't the sort of film that could travel into the heartland, and it was never a multiplex movie.
Right.
But by the stand, you know, for a film that cost $750,000, you know, it had what could only be called by indie standards a very, very strong run. And of all of the independent films that came out of Sundance last year, very, very few of them did any kind of well, you know, small well or big well. And, you know, they were, in fact, it was three films. It was The Illusionist, and it was Little Miss Sunshine, mm-hmm. and it was Us. It was Half Nelson. And, you know, Little Miss Sunshine was distributed by 20th Century Fox, and so it may have gone into Sundance independent, but it didn't come out independent.
Right.
And, you know, these movies have a lot of stars. I mean, Steve Carell, Toni Collette, you know,
sure.
Alan Arkin. The film cost literally 10 times what Half Nelson cost to make. So everything is relative. The film is, by any definition of success, for an independent film, a great success. And if, God willing, and he's won so many awards and accolades, and all of the handicappers and prognosticators say he's got a good shot, I think that Ryan is a very viable candidate for a Best Actor Oscar. And, you know, that would be fabulous, wouldn't it?
Very exciting. It would be outstanding. And I think well-deserved. I'm looking at some of the other performances that are on here. And obviously, he's in terrific company with DiCaprio and Peter O'Toole and Will Smith. But what's interesting to me is that I before scheduling this conversation, I had heard of some of those films. But I probably would not have heard of this film until I saw it either in Netflix as something new and interesting in independent films, or something at the local Blockbuster that was on a little independent shelf. Is there a sort of a way that you're thinking about, from your point of view, of reaching people like me who may not be right in San Francisco? If I were in San Francisco, I would have an opportunity to go to those art houses, but I live far enough away that I don't see those films necessarily. Stuff in San Francisco doesn't make it down to San Jose or over to Santa Cruz by...
Well, it actually does. It just tends to only play about a week because there's so much product and so few theaters
gotcha.
Of sort that play our films. The sad fact is, and I'm not condemning you, I'm not going to lecture you about how you should get out more, but...
you wouldn't be the first.
Yeah, that's my job.
Every print that I manufacture costs a couple of $1,000s, and so, you know, to just make prints and put them in theaters willy-nilly, you know, doesn't make sense. There has to be a demand. And, again, we're perfectly happy and perfectly well-prepared to acknowledge that the fifth month of availability on Half Nelson is Netflix, and that because
right.
it's really better for us for you to see it that way than for me to try to get you to go. Like, admit it, you know, if the film had been playing closer, what's the guarantee you would have gone? I have friends, good friends, who pretend to be very interested in what I do, and I live, you know, what, 12 miles west of Manhattan. My films always play in the town that I live in. They certainly, you know, I've had films get three or four major features in the New York Times. They're raging successes, and people will say to me on Saturday night at a cocktail party, so what are you working on, Mark? And I'll tell them, oh, I've got this film out now. It's doing really well. It's getting a lot of attention. They have never heard of it. And the fact is, they don't read the entertainment pages of the New York Times. They don't go to independent movies. They're nice people, but
yeah, they aren't good friends. Don't believe them. That's just a terrible prevarication.
I stopped talking to those people.
You are a very wise man. I was curious, you know, before we go in, just a really brief little nugget. I was kind of curious about the process of your job, and I was wondering if you could just take it briefly without revealing too many of the tricks of your trade. So you agree to get Half Nelson.
Right.
You're going to sign that on. Now this thing falls into your lap,
right?
Essentially, and you've got to get Half Nelson out there.
Right.
Could you take us through sort of just a little bit of the logic tree kind of that you went through when you were trying to get a film out to the audience, trying to find that film with the audience?
Okay, well, the first decision I made, and I made it immediately, was to pick a release date. It's a serious film, but it's a small film, and serious films tend to fare better in the fall, and I felt that it was an awards caliber film, but that it would be submerged by the big Hollywood films that tend to come out in October, November. So I decided I would open it in New York, which was a market I could very much control. We're based in New York. It's a New York story, New York-based talent. Open it in New York, and before Labor Day, but almost everywhere else after Labor Day. So in effect, it would be a fall film, but it would get a head start. It would be the first serious and highly acclaimed film of the year because the summer is all about frivolity and, you know, belching and farting. And so that's what I did. And in between, we played a lot of film festivals and, again, amassed a lot of reviews. We were getting reviews. The San Francisco Chronicle, off of the San Francisco Film Festival, was the first newspaper to say that Ryan Gosling gave an Oscar-worthy performance. This was back, you know, whenever your film festival is, in the spring, I think. And we played it all over and developed, you know, a lot of friends and a lot of quotes and a lot of sort of grassroots support for the film. It played at a very important film in Manhattan called, at the Museum of Modern Art, called New Directors, New Film, and was already exposed quite prominently in the New York Times and got a great review there. But the timing of the release was very, very important. We were selling out, turning people away. They were adding shows. We were making money hand over the fist in Manhattan for a few weeks. And then after Labor Day, when it's back to school, let's get serious, let's put on a sweater and see a serious movie, Half Nelson was already sort of famously doing well, and it continued from there. And had I waited just, you know, 6 weeks later, it would have been, we would have been clobbered. Like, nobody would have noticed our film because there was such a preponderance of big, highly vaunted, expensive, and well-endowed serious movies, many of them good. And a lot of them not so good, but they were much more muscular than our movie. So, you know, then you have to make a poster, you have to make a trailer, you have to do a lot of publicity, you know, you hire people to do all of this, you oversee their activities. I mean, it's very multidisciplinary, and it's a lot of nuts and bolts. It's dotting a lot of I's and crossing a lot of T's and, you know, lighting a lot of candles and saying a lot of prayers. And, you know, it's voodoo.
It's a Santeria operation, basically.
Exactly. And it really is. I always say that it's a kind of voodoo, and it's like trying to raise the dead. And sometimes, you know, the dead walk, and we don't quite know what we said or which combination of dust and feathers and, you know, pigeon feet went into making it work, but it's sometimes it works, and then sometimes it's just like bones and dust.
So you're releasing Woody Allen's next film. Okay, so so you go to Sundance next week, I think you say.
I do indeed.
You have an agenda, you have a list, you have a sense of what you're looking for, you've got like the racing form.
Oh, God, it's like D-Day. We've already had three major conference calls. I've already put together a calendar of exactly what films I will be seeing for the first 4 days of the film festival. We've already have meetings, and I'm meeting a filmmaker tomorrow. I met a filmmaker yesterday whose films are there. They're theoretical meetings in that I haven't seen the film yet, but it's like, you get to know me, I'll get to know you. If I like the movie, we don't have to, you know, we don't have to go out on the first date. We can go to second base right away.
Watch for pockets of German resistance. That's all I have to say.
Do you feel the need to watch a film all the way through?
Yes. If I don't see the end of the movie, then that's the last I will see of the movie.
Okay.
I mean, I've walked out of movies.
Sure.
I see six or seven movies a day at Sundance. Some of those are fractional screenings, but that's because I just can't stand it any longer. But I'm not going to pick the film up.
Right. And so do you find, for example, the films that you're looking at Sundance, do they reflect the times? Do they reflect your own personal mood? Is it sort of like, you know, what the judge had for breakfast? If you're feeling pretty happy, you're looking for comedies. If you had a fight with your wife, you're looking for romantic tragedies?
Oh, I don't think it's quite that, you know, hooked into my inner life. I obviously, film festivals are extraordinarily hard work. I don't complain so much when I'm at the Cannes Film Festival and I'm in the south of France and I'm eating way too well. But Sundance is
saying
like
the cuisine in Utah, not up to the south of France.
It's hard work. You're seeing a lot of film. You're getting up very early. And you're seeing film after film after film. And fatigue does set in, and I can't always say that we're at our best and that we're at our freshest. And but we are a team, and we rotate the crops. We probably have five, you know, key members of the team who are actively screening films for acquisition. musicians, and so, you know, sometimes I'll alternate a minor film that I'm personally interested in but don't actually believe we would ever pick up, just, you know, to sort of refresh myself with films that are, you know, like, we need to watch this very carefully because it could be interesting, and if it's interesting, you have to turn on a dime and, you know, start negotiating, make an offer, and you could be competing against other distributors. And all the while, I'm thinking about, how am I going to sell it? What's it worth? You know, when should it come out? Can I handle it? Is getting it at, you know, at the wrong price worth it? Because it's very tempting to just get the movie, you know, put it in your suitcase, bring it home, and then you unwrap it. And it's like, what am I going to do with this?
Right.
And it was too expensive.
Any film surprise you? You sort of had one type of expectation, and you had a chance to screen it, and you thought, oh my God, this is completely unexpected, and I must have this.
Yes, that happens all the time, and very often the films that one has high expectations for turn out to be, you know, just really garbage. Things with big names, you know, very often you get actors who are very established but who have like a month on their hands, and they'll do an independent film to establish credibility, and the film seems desirable on paper, sounds like an interesting story, and oh my God, you know, thus and such is in it from that sitcom, and you're sitting through this movie that's just like bad. And but it was probably the first movie you went to see because, oh, we can sell it, it's got that girl in it.
Yeah, he's not giving us any names, Sherry. You can tell here that he's not copying
time. I can read between the lines. I see Will Ferrell all over this.
And I smell Wilma Valderrama. I don't know why, I just do.
I'm not thinking of Will Ferrell. But, we know who I am. And then there are movies that have no portfolio, no pedigree. They don't even sound particularly interesting. And, you know, you draw the short straw and it's like, all right, I'll go to see that one. And You're vibrating with possibilities, and you go after that film, and sometimes it turns out to have been a good decision. Not always, but often enough so that, you know, one does it.
We are talking with Mark Ehrman from Think Films and www.thinkfilm.com. I feel like I've kept you on the phone for 40 minutes, which is 10 minutes longer than we had agreed to, and it's you're on the East Coast, and you're getting ready for whatever you've got going on for tomorrow, so we don't want to take up any more of your time, but we want to thank you so very much for being on the show with us today.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you so great. Much for inviting
me. We really appreciate that, and the film I don't think that there's a film that I've seen from Think Films that I could not recommend, and so it's worth going there, pulling down the list. I'll tell you what would be nice, and I don't know if you have any control over this.
The URL is actually www.thinkfilmcompany.com.
But if you go to Think Film, it'll actually point you over to Think Films. Whoever your webmaster is did a good job in figuring that out.
I'm so glad.
Yes, they did a terrific job. It would be lovely if when I go to Netflix, I could put in the name of the studio or the company that was responsible for it so that I could find all of the films from Think Film. And right now what you do is I was able to pull down listings of the films on your website and then go over to Netflix and type them in and then one by one add them. But that would be a nice way of sorting things because your company clearly has a vision or aesthetic, a philosophy that I find to be incredibly entertaining.
Well, I'm glad you think so. I mean, one of the nice things about having been around for 5 years is that we actually have become, you know, in a way, in our own minor way, a kind of brand. And if you've seen a strain, if you've seen an aesthetic, if you feel that we are a stamp of quality, then all I can say is I'm so happy to hear it.
Absolutely true, and that's why I wanted to get you on the phone, and I thank you so much for your time. Have fun in Sundance. I know it's not
thank
the south
you.
Of France, but they got snow.
Yeah, they do. Anyway, thank you all. Have a lovely evening. And
thank
I'll
you.
Go watch a movie now.
All right, take care.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You, Mark. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Outstanding.
That
yeah.
was great.
You can't get those free-range cattle balls in France either.
What?
Those
what?
What is it? The
are
free
you
range?
Channeling Parviz?
No, it's those oysters. The,
oh.
the what do they call those things? I don't know. I've blown it. Just take us
we
out.
To call,
to
what do we used to call those?
They call,
cow patties.
No, not
we were
the
doing
pool.
So well. We were
no,
such adults.
No,
we were
no.
doing yes.
No,
prairie oysters.
Prairie oyster. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
All right. It
Isn't that the same
me.
Thing as cow patties?
No.
No.
What are they?
That's poop.
I thought that's what prairie oysters were.
No. Prairie oysters are the testicles of bulls that are... I'm not sure how they're prepared, and I don't really want to know. But
we did but so well for
Utah.
40 minutes. For
I know.
40
why do you
minutes,
think
we
this
did
is
so
happening?
Well. I don't
why
know.
Why do you think this is happening? Because
for 40
you
minutes,
can't,
it was perfect.
You can't compress all those feelings for 40 minutes and not have some kind of an eruption at the end.
I had so many more questions I wanted to ask him.
Well, maybe he'll come back. In fact, it would be great if you can get him back after Sundance.
All right, I'll see what I can do. He's obviously a busy guy, and I don't want to take up his time. I mean, he gave us 40 minutes on a weeknight, which was pretty nice of him. So there you go. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Ken Turetsky and find out what's going on with his song over on the Red Peter Show on a Sirius Satellite Radio. You are listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, Sherry Stevens, and Sean Meehan. We're all inviting you to please stick around.
Up and give them all that they lack. Now ain't it funny, they pay them money. Shows what you can do if your horse can act.
You're listening to Schnauzer Logic Worldwide.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. Without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much. Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy?
In every way, this new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Frisco!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're, 45 minutes into the second hour, Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, Sherry Stevens. Mark was terrific.
I had so many other questions
that I wanted to ask him. He clearly knows the industry.
Let's nag him later in the year.
Yeah, I'd like to bug him and see if he'd be willing to come back and and kind of get into it a little bit more, because it's clear that he thinks about the marketing of it as much. He's clearly passionate about the creative side. There's
absolutely
no question about it. And also that he thinks about the marketing of it. Do you buy films that you know will go to Netflix very quickly because the experience will work well? What about films on small screens? Is that a thought process?
It's an interesting calculus that he has to run through. And what he said about the mass saturation to reach people in their, you know, the youth audience.
Sure.
The sort of 20-something demographic.
Made me feel old.
What does that tell you about mainstream film? I mean, I'm assuming that they're looking at pretty much the same strategizing that he's, you know, having come from that background. He's hooked into what they're hooked into. Our whole world of pop culture is designed to reach 20-year-olds.
What I thought was really interesting, too, though, is the delivery of film changes every year, that we have the Netflix and the blockbusters that are doing things by mail and the BitTorrents and the, you know, so they're looking at things in terms of selling even to Netflix, you know, to that end, instead of just in the theaters, which we don't always go to.
It's true.
I have heard for many years now, it's being like the last 3, 4, 5 years, that theatrical release is basically a loss leader for a lot of these films. Mm-hmm.
Sure. For distribution to DVD and for cable and for airplane, satellite, and all of those kind of things. Well, here's something you may hear on cable, satellite, DVD pretty soon. See if you recognize these dulcet tones. It's not Parviz, by the way. but I did play the harmonica. Little known fact.
She thinks her excrement has no odor. Some people got it, she got it too. It's just a gift that makes her special. The thing that makes her better than you. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink.
We like to call him Mr. Happy around here. Ken Turetsky. Ken, you know, I was listening to this song this afternoon, and it occurred to me that last time we played the song, the first time we had you on, we didn't ask you about the genesis of that song. Somebody clearly broke your heart, my friend.
Look, I just have to say, that's quite an act you got yourselves there. What do you call yourselves? The aristocrats!
One of the notes that I made to myself was to ask him to tell the joke, and it was pretty clear getting into it that was not the right thing. You have to be nimble on your feet.
This is my new thing. I always come into this program like 1.5 shows behind, so I've decided I'm going to try and anticipate some of the comedy that occurred in the previous segment. That's just my guess.
And you're right.
I may
on
have
the money.
Connected on that.
Yeah,
one.
Believe me, you did fine. You did better than Parviz, who's not here.
No, he's the master.
Yes, he is. Before the holidays, you were on the show. You were on our last big show of 2006, and you had mentioned to us that you were up for Song of the Year on the Red Peter Show over on Sirius Satellite Radio, part of Howard 101. And so the voting was beginning on December 27th. On December 27th, I'm sitting in Vegas, naked, in front of my computer, punching the button for Her Shit Don't Stink, and watching the numbers rise. I was very proud of myself. I actually even wrote a little script to push the button while I went off to dinner to see Danny
Gann. Yeah, before you get too far past the part about being naked in front of a computer, that's the way most of us are.
All right, so it was not untoward information. It was simply unnecessary information.
So you're saying you cheated for me?
I did. Well, it says vote early, vote often. I figured there was no problem in creating a little script that would just keep pressing the button while I went to watch Danny Gans. Yeah. Thinking about it now,
you should have just stayed and done it manually.
Exactly.
Cheating the honest way.
Exactly. But I noticed the next day that I was not able to make things move. And I was a little concerned, and I thought, well, maybe there are so many votes that pressing it 100 times won't even get it a tenth of a point or 1,000 times.
Isn't it frustrating? It like my friend Brandon Higgins said, dude, if they let them cheat and they don't let you cheat, that's cheating.
So what the hell happened?
It's that paperless voting.
Yeah, and it is very reminiscent of a couple of presidential elections.
Bush got elected again. So what's the deal? What's the dealio?
Gives me a chance. You know, I like to pretend I'm in show business, so I can complain about how tough it is.
Just, we're all in that game, my friend.
More of the same.
So what happened was, and you sent me a sort of a preview of a posting for your blog over at kenkoretsky.com. Did that actually go up, or did you
it's
not?
It's up now. Yeah,
it's live.
The voting
now.
Officially closed at 5 p.m. Eastern, but of course, as we all know, it closed like, you know, day two of the contest.
Right.
And only one song was collecting any votes.
And what the hell? So do we know what happened? Who was responsible for this whole thing? We get to the bottom of this? Is it kind of a deep poop?
I think they're just going to try and ignore it.
And, I know, as our governor says, where there's smoke, there's fire. I think yeah. I smell scandal.
There is a scandal. Maybe we can stir something up. You know, why should we let it die peacefully?
I feel badly for you, because the way that I was voting, you were sure to win.
Thank you, Robin. I appreciate you doing that. And I had a lot of people voting on my behalf, and I appreciate them all. And there were other songs that also were going to get great support, but they never had a chance to get out of the box. There was one other song. I was running 1-2 with the Muff Hair song by the Klansmen.
Mm.
And normally I would consider the Klansmen my arch enemies, but after a while I said, you know, fuck this. I'm going to see if this guy is also experiencing the same thing. So I emailed him on MySpace, and he had, at that point, had already sent off several drunken, angry emails to Red Peters. And he said, I told everybody on my mailing list that this piece of shit is not worth your time. I'm so sorry. And give it up. And he said many more things. And
any response from Red? Any response from Howard or his crew over there at Sirius?
Red just emailed back and said, tell your fans to keep voting.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
We need Jimmy Carter to look over this.
Yeah. Shock and awe. Another 20,000 votes.
Had a little extra time.
That's right.
Building a house.
All you need was an extra 20,000 votes for that surge. You need a surge of 20,000 votes.
Surge.
We missed the. Did you watch the president? We talked through the president.
Really, I'd like to say where mistakes have been made, the responsibility rests with me. Were you able to see this, or were you interviewing?
No. We're interviewing famous people.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to hear that quote tomorrow. And, I mean, I thought I was watching JFK, you know, I could have sworn I heard
the film?
You know, where mistakes have been made, the responsibility rests with me. You know,
it's Mayor Quigley.
Yeah, that's my Mayor Quimby impression.
Mayor Quimby. Well, whatever. Did President Bush say that?
He did say.
Holy
mistakes
crap.
Have been made.
And so
and more will be.
And so, what's your takeaway from this? I know that you're highly political.
Well, I thought, you know, they say that job really ages a man. I mean, it really is true. He's a much older looking moron now.
Like in Forrest Gump, when he gets gray temples towards the end of the film.
Mm-hmm. He was working very hard at appearing to be serious. And let me use up this joke I once wrote. Since Groundhog Day's coming up, I looked at my farmer's almanac, and it says, if Dick Cheney comes out of his bunker and sees a shadow, that means we're going to have 30 more days of nuclear winter. So, let me now put that joke to bed forever. It's been recorded.
It's memorialized here on Schnauzer Logic.
Yeah, last year, and okay, it's done now.
Not on this show, you didn't. We were just a fledgling podcast last year. So I went to your website, and I went to another website that linked to you. It has shows no performances listed at this point. Last time you talked to us, you would turn down a job at the world's largest retailer, who I've actually figured out who that is, by the way.
Well, why do you have to rub that in? Actually, I just interviewed for another job at one of the world's grodiest big box electronics retailers, so I'm terrified that they're going to offer me that job now. You know, it's one crisis to another.
Writing copy?
To the next. Yes.
I don't know, writing copy after CES and after Christmas, it's got to be fairly low-key, right? I mean, all of the advertising needs to be done before that, not afterwards.
This guy, in fact, is off at CES now. He just he kept me in his office. It was an hour and 40 minutes. I zoned out at about 35 minutes. And the office is full of toys and candy and computer games. You know,
like a pervert. You know,
and I mean, I woke up at one point, he was talking about how many home runs he'd hit in the company softball league. And I went right back to sleep. Finally, he got a phone call and had to rush off. You know, it rescued me.
It sounds like John Wayne Gacy's got toys and candy. It's like, show us where the interviewer touched you.
Yeah. There's a hurt puppy in his van.
Are you into
gadgets? It's a fine line, you know, between all these different types of lunatics, I guess.
Are you into gadgets and things of that nature, being a Jewish guy?
If they're useful. Okay. I mean, I don't want another gadget, you know, to lose. I don't even have a cell phone.
Is that true?
Yeah,
How can you survive these days without having a cell phone?
You're getting close to the point where you can't. Like, last time my old car broke down, AAA said, I don't think we can send any truck out to rescue you if you don't have a cell phone.
Wow.
And I said, hey, I'm at this payphone, and please send somebody out to get my car. And they relented, but at some point, yes, I will have to get a cell phone.
I will lose
it 2 days later.
I imagine you usually rely on the people that run into your car to use their cell phones.
That better not happen anymore, you know, now that I have a nice car.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You got the...
Oh, that's true. That was the Honda? You got the Accord?
I have the Honda. Yeah. Thanks for remembering.
Oh, crap. Yeah. And I do remember. How poor is my life?
With the blinking security light, it isn't a real alarm.
That's right. It's just warding off those epileptic car thieves.
Yes. So, no, I don't have any gigs lined up, but thanks for reminding me.
New Year's resolutions? I mean, we're about 10 days into the new year. It's 2007. The bowls are over. We're moving towards the springtime. We'll have spring training. They just brought what's his name into the Hall of Fame.
Cal Ripken
Jr.
And the dude from San Diego.
But not Mark McGuire.
No,
is that
that's a shame?
You think that? Do you think that's a shame, or do you think it's a sign of things to come for people like him and Barry Bonds and Sammy Sosa?
Well, they're raging hypocrites. These baseball guys—they knew what was going on, and they loved the home runs. And now
they did nothing.
Right.
Right. But
and how about all the speed everybody took in the '60s?
They're going to try and send these poor schmucks to jail. It makes me sick. You think they may even go after Barry Bonds?
Well, I think the fact that they may go after Barry Bonds is the reason that the Giants haven't finished signing his contract yet.
Yeah.
Okay. But who's to say Tony Gwynn and Cal Ripken never used it? We don't know.
And you know, in the 60s, I understand there are legendary stories about guys popping speed like candy. And, you know, what do we do about the... Does an asterisk go beside everybody who played from, you know, 58 to 74?
Are you saying that Mookie Wilson...
He was straight.
Okay.
He was clean.
But Tommy Agee?
Oh, thank you for remembering Tommy Agee. I still remember my mother looking at Tommy Agee on TV and saying, he looks Italian.
You couldn't see it because of the bad resolution, but he had sores
great
on his
Tommy
tongue
Agee.
From
Tommy Agee.
So long.
I grew up a New York Mets fan.
Art Shamsky.
That's right. That's right. Oh, God. So we feel so badly that that we were not able to push you over the top with Her Shit Don't Stink. So are you back in the studio? Or are you writing new tunes? Are you recording? What is a standard day in 2007 like for the great Ken Turetsky?
Well, of course, as always, it starts with jerking off.
Okay.
And you know, then I wash my face. And I say, should I make coffee today? And get in the internet, see if I got an email.
This is your kind of guy, Sherry. Sherry, you know, Sherry is divorced and looking for someone who's stable.
And
she's looking for someone stable. And I'm thinking, all the things you mentioned, you can count on.
Sherry, I thought it was this other comedian that...
What?
Believe me, I'm not a comedian.
Oh, we were trying to set him up with Allie.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, with Allie. Yeah.
Or Jan. Oh. There are so many options for you around here, my friend. There are just a plethora of possible females that would go for this. But what I'm impressed about of that is, in this order, you wake up, you jerk off, think about coffee, wash your face, do that sort of thing, and then turn on the internet.
Yeah,
you're way behind times.
It's an old fashioned guy.
Yeah, still jerk off manually, dude.
It's a tough life, you know, and again, I didn't realize how horrible it was until you made me describe it.
Well, then our job is done.
Yeah. Get a healthy breakfast in there. That's a lot of exertion.
Oh, well, you know, I'm buying green leaf lettuce now, and I just let it rot in my refrigerator.
You know what I like about that? It rots a lot faster than the old iceberg head.
Yes, you can dump it out even before the iceberg stuff.
Yeah,
that you never ate, but this stuff is harder to clean, so you really never will eat it.
Oh, and, God!
Now, what was this about? You might go back on regular radio. That concerns me. all the motherfuckers out right now?
No. If you can. The owner of KSCO contacted me on Christmas Eve to ask me whether we were interested in somehow doing something on KSCO radio, and he's been on a cruise for the last, I guess, week and a half or so. So I haven't had a chance to talk to him, but I'm guessing what he's interested in doing is maybe taking this show and sort of simulcasting it, you know, one day a week. I mean, we recorded in a studio; it's all produced. It's easy enough to package up, and I could take out the motherfuckers and the cocksuckers. And
not if we make the whole show motherfucker cocksucker.
On a very special Schnauzer Logic. Just like the emergency broadcast signal.
And Parvis. La 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 la. So that's a possibility. Are you saying you don't want to be a part of the show? You don't want to be part of any show that would have you as a member? Is that what you're saying? Or
put me on the dirty version.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it would be like Sirius or XM. We would have the dirty, unexpurgated version for people who are willing to pay for the podcast, which is no one. And then we would have the version that would go out to all of the old people in Santa Cruz.
The cheap ass redacted version.
Well, do your worst. I don't want to hold you back in your career.
You wouldn't be the first.
Yeah. So I think my goal this year will be to work on the loser vibe I started on you know, two shows ago on Schnauzer Logic.
It's stronger every time we talk.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a plan. I mean, if you want to sell the concept, you got to believe in it. You know? So I'm working hard on knocking myself down, destroying my self-confidence, you know, and although my Jewish mother probably is not going to before me tormenting myself, because, you know, it's her job. So. But, you know, when life gets too hectic, I can always retreat to my personal hell.
Well,
so there you go.
On that little...
You pushed me, and that's my goal.
So. Ken Duretsky's little book of aphorisms. daily.
Yeah, I will come up with some new music.
Chicken
for you.
Bile for your life. Every day.
Over and over and over.
That's right. Does this look infected to you by Ken Duretsky?
Wait, let me write that down. Yeah.
Ken, thanks so much. We ran long today talking with Mark Ehrman, but we really appreciate it. And if you want to write a really nasty email to Red Peters, go over to Sirius.com or go to the blog. We'll send you a link. And go tell them how fucked up it was that they didn't let our good friend Ken win the contest.
Well, give Red a break. He's a good guy.
Oh, is he?
Well,
then write Howard Stern. He's got money.
I don't want to burn that bridge right now. I think, you know, he's dealing with the bosses the way the rest of us are.
Yeah.
And
just a man trying to keep him down.
Yeah, but go to my site and
read
the stuff I put up there, because I'm a writer. You know, I put some pretty good content on that.
I go to that site every day.
Okay, thank you.
No, I don't. But I have it in my list of favorites, so I do occasionally check it out and see what you've written and see what other shows you've been on, and then I go listen to those shows as well.
Oh, good. So that's how the word gets around about
great podcasts. Word gets it around. KenTuretsky.com. Ken, thanks so very much. We'll hopefully talk with you in a couple of weeks. Be happy, my friend.
Oh, thanks. You too, Robin. All right. Sean, that's Sean there. And
yep, and Jerry. Sean and Jerry.
Okay, great talking to you.
Take care.
Talking
all right.
To you,
thanks, Ken. Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
Don't worry, be happy.
I love Ken.
Someone has to. <That's>
And that
I think he's got a shot at his goal this year.
Masturbating 365 times?
No, working on the loser dynamic. Working on that...
Pat Paulson used to have that, and he ran for president. So, that kind of lovable loser, that kind of...
Did you see the prophecies came out this last week of Pat Robertson?
Oh,
remember?
Wow.
I did see the photograph of him bench pressing 3,000 pounds or something like that.
Because of his shake. Yes. He's got some kind of health shake that is not available in this country.
It's not a tumor.
So what were the prophecies?
Well, the prophecies were obviously pretty nondescript. The big prophecy was that the United States, a major American city, would be hit by a terrorist strike that would disrupt the lives of millions of people. But, and it comes with this caveat, God did not specifically say nuclear. So, be
it
my guest,
you know,
fill
earthquake.
In the blank.
Oh, did you
no,
hear
it's a terrorist act.
Oh, terrorist. So, okay.
Can you really have a whole lot of faith in God's wisdom when he's talking to wackos?
I don't know, but I heard a justification. I guess someone asked him about his last year. He predicted that a tsunami would destroy America because of our, you know, because the cone of protection was raised.
Oh, right, by the gays and the lesbians.
Right, the gays pulled it right up.
Yeah,
but
feminists.
Yeah, there was no choice. God had to pull it up. Anyways, he said, well, there were heavy rains. I shit you not. There were heavy rains in the Northeast this year, and that covers the... So basically, all you people on the coast of India and what have... You might as well... You know, you could have had heavy rains, so feel good about your situation.
You were saying something.
Oh, I caught the tail end of a newscast this morning on my way to work, and we in California are being encouraged to have food and water supplies because of earthquake risks. So I didn't you know.
That's nothing new, though, is it?
Well to have it being highlighted right now.
They're putting on a big push.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And having grown up here all my life, or most of my life, this is, you know, because it's unseasonably warm. This is
earthquake weather.
It's usually more balmy.
But it isn't unseasonably warm. It's unbelievably cold.
You keep saying that.
Because it
was 68 degrees yesterday.
I know, but at night it drops down to 30, and we're supposed to get temperatures in the next few days that don't get above 40 in the daytime.
Right,
we've
got this.
That would be cold. But,
so we're safe from earthquakes for about a week.
68 degrees in January is warm.
Let's call Al Gore.
My thong is chapping.
Well, that can lead to chafing, and that's all kinds of trouble.
Which is a film that will be released by Think Films. I wanted to ask him about this film called Zoo, which I think has to do with bestiality.
Hmm.
That's getting some interesting press.
That will be released in San Francisco.
We will be able to
see that.
All right. Hey, listen, thank you guys
for
another great show.
41.
41 down, baby.
Sequentially, it works.
Well, according to Mark Zinkel, it did.
And
that's
all
that was really
too.
Important.
Just three more shows and we'll have more shows under our belts than there have been presidents of the United States of America. And I think that's an important milestone.
Three more shows and we'll be at our one-year anniversary, too.
Wow.
February the 1st was our one-year anniversary. So we're coming up on 1 year. So, I mean, we more big guests in 2007. Please tell your friends. The only way to find out about the show is if you know somebody who knows something about it. So tell your friends. We got another review on the iTunes Music Store. That's great. More reviews are terrific. I love you, Mom. I miss you, Dad. Show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. www.schnauzerlogic.com. That is the address. Robin@schnauzerlogic.com. That's the email. Or you can send email to Parvis@parvisparvis.com. Give us a call at area code 206-666-6540. See you here next week?
Yeah.
See you here next week?
Absolutely.
God bless you both. We'll have a great time, and we'll talk about the Golden Globes.
Cool.
All right.
Great.
Or not. All right. Take care, you guys. Have a great week. We love you. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here?
It's over. Go home. Go.
Elvis has left the building.
I'm in my vagina.
No.